you.
I'm going to talk about competition between two phytoseeds that live in apple trees and whether this interferes with biological control. And I'm going to start off with the take-home messages to kind of give you an overview of the talk at the same time. Neosiulus phalacis is a sort of specialist predator of spider mites and is a very effective natural enemy. But unfortunately, in our part of Canada and Nova Scotia, there's very low numbers of them in the tree canopy. And I believe one of the major reasons for this is the presence of the generalist phytoseed Typhlodromus pyrii. Typhlodromus pyrii is a less effective enemy of spider mites, partly because it has a limited numerical response to prey density, and partly because it does not aggregate on prey patches in the tree canopy. This means that very slight perturbations, such as an increased rate of immigration of T. urticae from the ground cover, can cause a breakdown in biological control. There's a couple of remedies for this. I believe the first is to take steps to reduce the rate of immigration of T. urticae from the ground cover into the tree. And of course, the more obvious one is to adopt a modified spray program where you can to conserve both predators in the system. Now, we became aware of the situation of shortage of N-phalacis in two studies. The first one was done intensively just in three orchards where T. pyrii had been released several years previously. And what we did is we monitored mites on sticky bands attached to the tree trunks to look at migration, and of course the mites in the tree canopy. We found that N-phalacis was a small minority of the phytoseeds in the tree. And the solid blue bars indicate the proportion of phytoseeds that were T. pyrii. The graph on the left for 2002 indicates that about 95% or more of the mites were T. pyrii in the canopy, very small number of N-phalacis. The only exception occurred in the following year when the grower had applied pyrethroids in the orchard, and in that scenario there were large numbers of two-spotted spider mites in the tree canopy, and T. pyrii was at very low numbers. In that situation, N-phalacis were 50% of the phytoseeds, but there weren't very many of them. It was a little bit different on the sticky bands on the tree trunk. There was greater parity between the two predators. In the first year, the graph on the left, 2002, the red bars indicate that there were 7,000 to 9,000 T. urticae sampled through the season from May to October. And in that situation, N-phalacis varied from 30 to 50% of the phytoseeds caught on the sticky bands. Quite a different situation then from the tree canopy. The following year, N-phalacis disappeared. There were none found on the sticky bands in two of the orchards. And in that year, there were very few T. urticae, only several hundred sampled through the growing season. Of course, T. urticae is a favored prey of N-phalacis, and there's a strong dependence of one upon the other. In the third orchard, where the grower had applied pyrethroids, all of the very few phytoseeds were N-phalacis caught in the sticky bands. We also did a more extensive survey in those 2 years, looking at mites in 12 orchards, and we found that the solid blue bar indicates that nearly all of the phytoseeds were T. pyrii in both years, at least, I think it was 97%. They were found in all 12 orchard blocks. N-phalacis, a small number, were found in one block in 2002 and two of them in 2003. Now, there's a number of reasons why N-phalacis may not be common in trees. The first and most obvious, of course, is application of toxic pesticides. That's a no-brainer. The other thing is they have a requirement for a minimum number of prey to allow them to colonize the tree. And Johnson and Croft suggested this was one tetranychid or 15 apple rust mites per leaf. Another issue is low winter survival on the tree. A study in New York found this out. And so therefore, Colonization of the tree the following season is very likely from mites that overwintered on the ground. Now, if there's very few T. urticae on the ground, too few of them, they're extremely sparse, you're going to get very few N. phalaces colonizing the trees. This was found out in Illinois. And another issue is when you have a cold winter followed by very little snow cover. A study in Quebec, they found that there were very few N. phalaces following these kinds of winters. Another issue is application of inappropriate herbicides. The worst scenario is when they're more toxic to the predator than to T. urticae. And finally, of course, the influence of T. pyrrhi, which is the theme of this talk. So how does T. pyrrhi influence N. phalaces? Well, because this generalist can survive and reproduce on a diet of pollen, it is able to knock down the prey populations to extremely low levels, too few to sustain N. phalaces. So I believe the bigger effect is competition for food resources between the two predators. There is something of an issue with intra-guild predation. About the only advantage that T. pyrrhi has over phalaces is that it gains more benefit from feeding on other phytoceids than does N. phalaces. And it's more inclined to do so, being a generalist. Now, are there cases where T. pyrrhi has displaced other more specialized phytoceids? In Oregon, they placed T. pyrrhi and Metasiulus occidentalis on potted apple trees, and they found that within 1 year, occidentalis had virtually disappeared. They attributed this to competition and also to considerable intra-guild predation, which was validated in lab trials. In New York, they did a survey in 23 orchards where phytoceids were found, and the two predators, N. phalaces and T. pyrrhi, coexisted in only 4 of those 23 orchards. Another study was done in Ontario, indoors with potted apple trees, where equal numbers of T. pyrrhi and N. phalaces were placed on trees heavily infested with the European red mite. Same numbers of predators at the start, but 5 weeks later, only 5% of the phytoceids were N. phalaces. Now, unfortunately, this has its consequences. T. pyrrhi has a number of weaknesses as a natural enemy of T. urticae. The first reason is that very few T. pyrrhi occur in the ground cover. This means that they don't suppress T. urticae populations in that habitat. Secondly, they have a very modest numerical response to prey density. This is partly because they take a long time to pass from egg to adult. They're slow developers. And secondly, they have a limited, they produce a very limited number of eggs compared to other phytoceids. And equally important, they do not aggregate where tetranychid prey occur on the tree. This was demonstrated when Panonychus ulmi was the prey by Jan Nyroff in New York, and we found the same thing recently in our orchards where T. urticae was the prey. So the predator and the prey are distributed more or less randomly in relation to each other among the leaves. This means that when densities of both are low, there is very little encounter between predators and prey. There's very little overlap. Hence, in the early season, T. urticae has the opportunity to multiply virtually unchecked by this predator. And the consequence is that later in the season, even modest rates of immigration or perhaps warmer weather conditions will destabilize the system, allowing the T. urticae to increase and get out of control. I think there's two major remedies to this situation. The first is to manipulate the ground cover so as to reduce immigration of T. urticae into the trees. We've done a lot of research in the last few years on narrower herbicide strips and found that was indeed highly effective in reducing immigration and T. urticae in the tree canopy, where T. pyrrhi was the predator. In Switzerland, they found that they had the fewest spider mites going up the tree when they had continuous ground cover under the tree. That had to be grasses. The problem is, of course, you've got to have the right grasses. because they compete with the tree for nutrients and water. Another approach is to use the appropriate herbicides. People have had good success when they've used glufosinate instead of glyphosate, for instance, as an application in the tree row in the herbicide strip. And Croft has advocated having shelter belts around the orchard which serve as banker plants for enphilasis. Conifers have their own spider mites. If you have conifers around the orchard, you're going to have a supply of enphilasis which can blow into the orchard. And finally, a no-brainer, adopt a modified spray program to conserve the predators. And I would emphasize the acaricide issue because we found that a certain acaricide aggravated the situation in our orchards and really promoted spider mites in the long term. Thank you.
My name is Mark Botel. I'm with North Dakota State University. Section F chair just happened to be stepping in here and making sure all the sessions were running fine. And sorry to hear that Dr. Arthur can't join us, and I'm just helping out with Dr. Olson here. So, with that, we will introduce Dr. Olson as our next speaker, speaking on Spinetoram, which is Delegate WG, as a new management tool for coddling moth control in U.S. apples.
There I get to start my own time. Okay, as a brief overview, as far as for my presentation, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Spinetoram itself, and then I'm basically going to get into the actual data as far as its control of collie moth or internal worms in tree fruits. As far as Spinetoram, it is a spinosin. Where the spinosins are...
There is my very long talk title, extremely descriptive and boring, and really... What I want to do is harness Master Gardener enthusiasm. This sign says Garden Diva, hard at work, and some of these can be very enthusiastic with their plants as well as with their ornaments in their landscape. So essentially, my overall goal is to increase the use and production of pest-resistant plants. I think we can all be sort of on the same page that we feel like pest-resistant plants is a pretty good foundation for an IPM program or a quote-unquote sustainable landscape. So I was really encouraged to hear some of the information about what master's gardeners want to learn about, and we've had experience in some of our own surveys that master gardeners are very interested in pest-resistant plants and want to use them more and want to get them more. So I'm not an economist, but I can understand sort of that top-down and bottom-up approach to marketing of plants. I have worked extensively with nurseries doing IPM scouting and that type of thing, and they're extremely resistant to change. I don't know if you've noticed this working in a nursery, and I was being paid good money to go out and tell them whether they should treat or not, and had someone actually, the guy was paying me very good money to go out there and do this, look me in the eye and say, I know what you're saying is right, but I'm going to spray. So I, very resistant to change. However, if they have people that are asking for certain plants or demanding that, hopefully that will help them to get a little bit of change on their growing patterns and what they want to do. So the overall objectives of developing this software was to kind of just increase general knowledge about these quote-unquote sustainable plants, low-input plants that require less fertilizer, less water, and less pesticides because they are just naturally inhibited by fewer insect pests and disease pests. Also, what's also I found very difficult is we recommend plants to master gardeners and to others, and they don't know where to get them. So to me, making that connection about, yes, this is a good plant to buy, but sorry, you can't buy it anywhere, and making that link and trying to help them facilitate purchasing would be another good way to get that bottom-up approach. And just changing people's attitudes, making it something that was very accessible to them. In the long range, basically just getting people to use more and more of these plants in their landscapes. Now, master gardeners in Georgia, and I'm sure in pretty much every other state, do a variety of things in how they interact with the public. Almost all of our 159 counties are manned by master gardeners that answer the phone and answer questions and really save a lot of time for our agents there. A lot of them initiate. I saw in the last talk they go to county fairs and they make booths and they make presentations for homeowners associations and things. So they're really making a good link with the public. They also, I saw a survey that from the National Gardening School School Gardening Survey that 66% of the school garden people who plan school gardens associate with the Extension Service in some way, either having master gardeners tell them how to do things or have them come help. They have plant sales. They grow their own plants for selling. So if they can grow these sustainable plants or these low-input plants, that's ideal. And then they, in Athens, where the University of Georgia is, they actually develop and host a very nice symposia with invited speakers and whatnot. Now, where do we get this information on these pest-resistant plants? I have to tell you, my Bible, as probably most other people's Bibles for, you know, pest-resistant plants, quick and dirty, is Deborah Smith Fiola's publication, Pest-Resistant Ornamental Plants. An unfortunate thing about this publication is that you can't find it anywhere unless you track Deborah down. I've had a really difficult time getting copies for my master gardeners and that type of thing. So, you know, it has its limitations there. Trade journals, scientific journal articles. Now, I do an informal survey every time I go and talk about sustainable plants about how many of the landscape maintenance folks actually subscribe to the Journal of Economic Entomology. And astoundingly, nobody has yet. I know it's a great journal, but so people are not really reading these things. Extension offices are a good source. They help synthesize that. Tons of gardening books. As I was putting this software together, I easily spent $800 just on reference materials to try to gather all the information. And Whitney, I'm expecting a proceeds check from all of the promotion I've done of your book anytime. That'd be good. That's one of my favorites. Yes. and then, you know, I've heard it said garden centers are a good source of information, but, you know, some of it's science-based, some of it's sales-based, and what I hope to do is more on the line of what Deborah Smith Fiola has done and promoting documented plant resistance. So we received some grant funding from the Sustainable Ag Research and Education in Southern Region and combined with these groups to put together some sort of tool that people could use to find out about these sustainable plants. And then I happened to find a company called GardenSoft, which is actually from California, that had been developing these water-wise software programs for municipalities. And I was really excited because it was very photo-rich, and Pam was talking this much morning about how much master gardeners like to see pictures. Pictures are great, and this was just a very fun, interactive thing for looking at gardens and looking at plants. And when I contacted them, he also had a great love for master gardeners and a great love for cooperative extension, so it was a really nice match for us both. The features of the software, you know, the company's been around for a while. They've worked with municipalities, so writing the contract was not going to be nearly as much of a headache, so he knew what to expect with dealing with bureaucracy. It's the most comprehensive plant database out there with about 500-plus plant characteristics per plant that you can do searches on. So one of my big issues that I have with these references to plants is, yes, that's a very nice name for a cultivar, she pink or whatever, but what does it look like? Where does it grow? How does it grow? That kind of thing. It's user-friendly, easy to install, has not crashed the computer yet, so it has a lot of tools that could be useful for extension. This is the opening screen. They have a software program called PlantMaster. They have developed a cooperative extension edition for us. And I'm gonna, this is just a screenshot, but I will go through the software and actually demonstrate it. Some of the features is we have taken Southeastern plants. It's a California company, so we had to represent the Southeastern plants a little bit better in there. We've put in that has the horticultural characteristics as well as the plant resistance or pest resistant characteristics. IPM data, so you can use it as an IPM timing and management tool, and photography, lots of good photography, which the master gardeners really like. It's easy to add an unlimited number of plants and photos, lots of characteristics to search by. You can have customizable fields depending on what your area of interest is. The nice thing, we have been trying to make inroads with the landscape architecture folks. I have shaken my head at some landscape plans that I've seen, you know, growing Canadian hemlock in the Florida Keys. You know, it's a great looking plant. It had wonderful height characteristics, but maybe not the best horticultural characteristics for where it was. So trying to get these landscape architects to understand a pest resistant plant as well as what fits best in that area from an aesthetic standpoint as well as a site condition standpoint. Now this is where you add and manage photos. So far this is the best photo management, and I'm not getting any proceeds from this company, unfortunately, but it's the best photo management software I've found for matching up plant pictures with their characteristics. You can upload all of your own photos in here and manipulate them. It keeps your name as credited to that picture if you share it, and all of those, the plants have multiple pictures that you can put in there for it. You can easily create slideshows with this, which as an extension specialist I really like. You can select a bunch of plants, you can go through, again this is just a screenshot, and you can you know, go through a slideshow of all the plants that you'll be talking about. You can describe anatomy, design, pest and disease, all right there on the screen. Easy to add and edit plants, and I'll go through how to do this. I'm not going to linger on here, but these are all of the different characteristics that you can put in for an individual plant or cultivar. So now we are going to attempt to get this up and running and see if we can get it working. Okay, so this is the opening screen of the software, and generally what I like to do to demonstrate is just a plant search. Generally what happens in our